This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app, and though you may have missed Doug Norrie and myself this week, you can be a part of it next week when we come on to talk all things Brooklyn Nets basketball. Get in on the action with Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. And we, of course, have a great episode coming up for you today. Doug Norrie takes us back inside of the last game against the Toronto Raptors, looks at what they tried to do defensively to throw Kevin Durant off his game, and then lets us know that you can't throw KD off his game. But it was the supporting cast that also helped alleviate some of the pressure Toronto tried to give. Is that a look ahead to playoffs and what other teams may try to run at him? We'll dive into that. And then found a little article over on the old internet machine talking about some of the past examples of how teams try to work their way through the regular season without overtaxing the key players they want to use in the playoffs. And if we can glean anything around the Brooklyn Nets, some of the big matchups they're going to have. And then finally, last but not least, get your lists out. Top five, we need to know the biggest and brightest Nets fans out there in the landscape of celebrities. We've got our nominee. See if he passes your sniff test. But before we do, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Doug Norrie, talking Brooklyn Nets with you, but also the owner and operator of DFSR.com. If you're in the need for FanDuel and DraftKings projections, head on over there. We got them for NBA, NHL, MLB, PGA, every single thing covered for FanDuel and DraftKings. So go over to DFSR.com, and that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets over on Sportscaster. He's also the host of the One Giant podcast, where he's covering the New York football Giants. Buddy, how are we doing knowing that the Nets are secure in the playoffs?
As good as I've ever felt, as strong as I've ever been, as powerful as I've ever thrusted myself into the existence of the world of Brooklyn Nets. This is, we're good, man, right? We keep talking about feeling like when are the playoffs going to start? That's what we want to get to. We keep checking the health boxes, and then you check off the clinch the playoff position. I feel like maybe we could say is clinching the number one seed something that we can achieve in relatively short order? Maybe that's the last box before I'm just like, let's effing go. I want playoff basketball.
All I heard from you was clinching and thrusting. That was the only two things. The only two things that I took away.
If you take any two things away from me today, it's clinching and thrusting.
I spaced out for a second. I went into a nice little place, and I just thought about you clinching and you thrusting. And I don't know what else you said. Believe me, buddy, you use the wrong verbs, you're going to lose me completely. That's you know how the brain operates.
Or capturing.
All right. it's in a funny place within that season right now. It's like it's one of those things where when you talk about a team for the entire season and they kind of have reached at least the first checkbox of where you need them to be, and the Nets have reached that. It's, you know, if you look at the season as this long sort of winding race through a bunch of different things, it's, you know, non-linear. It's linear in some ways, but it has a lot of twists and turns around it also. And you think, okay, are we hitting certain check marks? Are we hitting, you know those places where we can check in and say, all right, are we happy to be here at this point? I think you can mostly say yeah, right? It's like, okay, they're number one seed in the East right now. They've clinched the playoffs. There's nothing more at this point in the season you could have asked for except for 100% health, right? I think from that standpoint, you have to be feeling pretty good. Using the only litmus right now to say as we can't be anywhere. This is the only place you can be in right now. So right now things look pretty good.
Yeah, I can't. What other bar could I have set, or what other expectations could I have put forward that the Nets would have fallen short of? Like you say, shy of the health. But you at the start of this season, by the way, like we laid out all these things and the potential and the concerns and the ideas and even pre-Harden trade, right? Like, there were a lot of different things to try to figure out over the course of the season, and we've discussed them all, friends. But at the end of the day, we've still gotten through all of that, and most of our concerns ended up being things that I don't think we really laid out at the start of all this as being, hey, keep an eye on James Harden's health. That was not something we didn't come across over the course of this year,
right? Yeah, like, right. I was going to say, like, the guy who's not on the team right now wasn't on the team at the beginning of the season either. So how much has changed except for Karras and Jarrett aren't here. And Spencer's hurt, but that's for a different reason. Want to talk about a bunch of different stuff today. Got some stats we wanted to look at for some playoff things that we wanted to consider. Want to talk about Nets fans maybe who the most famous Net fan is right now. We're in an interesting situation where the Nets have reached this sort of like weird pinnacle of NBA zeitgeist popularity, but they sometimes don't, you know, sometimes with that becomes long famous fans, but the Nets maybe aren't in exactly in the same place as some of the other bigger franchises. Did want to talk a little bit about Kevin Durant and what the Raptors threw at him on Tuesday. Went back and watched. Be interested to hear your take. I know I went back and watched the first half just because I was interested in specifically, we talked about this on yesterday's podcast, specifically what smart teams in the playoffs might end up trying to do with KD, right? Like what like maybe a team like the Raptors, who the Nets might see in the playoffs, you know, if things kind of shake out of a certain way, will do to mitigate some of the damage that Kevin Durant could do to them. So we ended up watching what the first half plan was with him. And I thought it was pretty interesting. Some things were really obvious in the moment, right? We talked about yesterday's podcast about how the Raptors were clearly throwing double teams at him every possible opportunity, right? That was right. Like pretty obvious. It was, as long as they weren't getting into cross match situations, they were throwing OG at him first. And then literally whoever was in the vicinity was then tasked with, if the ball goes to him, you are to make a beeline to him. Do not assume that the guy you have is not a player on the other team and just double team Kevin Durant. And that was really obvious. But I mean, would you agree, like, let's start there, because I saw some other things, but were you, in a situation like that, knowing that that was one of the things that happened, were you sort of satisfied with the results around how the Nets basically dealt with something of a new look when it came to opposing defenses, making it very clear what their intentions were?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things we have covered so much is the coaching, right? And Steve Nash and those adjustments. Now, sometimes it's simple, and we were going over this before we got on around, well, getting the ball into Kevin Durant's hands when they want to bring double teams at him and letting him bring the ball up the court. That's a great displacer of that pressure. But what I find interesting about it is that Toronto specifically, because listen, Kyrie was still in this game and he had a quiet night, but they identify KD as being the number one issue, the number one threat. And I think what to me maybe would fuel Toronto's thinking on trying to run double teams on him and then live with the results behind it is because, as we talked about ahead of that matchup, it's the length that they have on the defensive end in spite of Van Fleet and Lowry being small guys. But, you know, OG and Siakam, I feel like they have the athleticism, or they felt like they would have enough athleticism to then recover on those other targets, on the other players, off of Kevin Durant. So it's this risk-reward that you try to run. But if you're Kevin Durant, if you're the Nets, and you can counter it 1, 2, 3 times with different looks, then it just gets to a place where if you're Toronto, you've now taken away the wind in the sails of, maybe if we pressure Kevin Durant, some of these other guys won't be able to handle the load. And then cut two, we got 6, 7 guys in double figures, and Kevin Durant can have a very gentlemanly 7 and 10 double-double, and they win going away.
Yeah, and that's exactly I'm going to get through it, buddy. That is kind of what we basically saw from this, right? It was that they quickly realized that, because Kevin Durant quickly realized something. He was like, well, this is great. You're going to double-team. That's just going to mean we're probably 2 passes away from a completely open guy. Not the first pass, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes it was the first pass. He had one great skip pass across the court to Harris out of a double team that was just an instant 3. But most times what they were able to do out of the double was 2 passes away, because everyone else had sort of shaded over in a half a rotation. And the first guy got a little bit of a closeout off of the guy who had come for the help D. And then it was 1 or 2 passes away from someone being wide open. So Kevin Durant, the one very cool thing off the jump is that, say, he's like, okay, well, if you're going to double team me, what's going to happen here is that I'm just going to pass right out of it, and the ball is going to move faster than you can recover, right? So that happened a lot. And then the second thing that happened with them was when they weren't able to get the ways that they were able to keep Kevin. So once they realized that this was kind of happening, actually, it didn't happen as much as you maybe thought it did during the game. Like, in my mind, thinking back in the game, I was like, oh, they doubled them the whole game. Okay, that wasn't the case, actually, right. In rewatching it. It was because the Nets began to run actions where they made the double impossible. Not every time. They still got them into it a couple times just based on what they were running. But what they started doing, one, a couple times they just had them bring the ball up. That's going to necessitate not being able to double because you're not going to trap a Kevin Durant because he's so tall he'll pass right out of it, right? So, like, that's going to be not a situation that's really going to work for you. So they weren't able to double in those situations. Most times it was a dribble handoff and kind of run an action away, and it's still kind of threw off any timing they were going to have around bringing help to him. And also what they started running was like little two-man games, and it kind of didn't matter who they did it with. They did a couple times with Kyrie where he would be the high screener. He was the high screener, and Kevin Durant's not a robust screener. He's you can practically see through him still for as athletic as he is. He's just not a big – like he's not a big body by any means, and he's just not – the screening is just not his game, and you probably don't want him out there setting a ton of screens anyway. But they did try to do that where he set a couple screens for Kyrie. He actually did it for Mike James a couple times where they ran either he was a screener and then overload situations where they would just put the other three shooters on the other side of the court. So it was a two-man game between the point guard, whoever the point guard was, and KD, overload. And then that's why we saw actually Mike James a couple times be able to get to the rim, right? Like he was able to get there because – the defense was so – is not going to be concerned with his whereabouts, but they're going to be more with KD, and now all of a sudden he's actually getting open looks. So I thought that the adjustment – go ahead.
No, no, because I was going to say, like, do you think – the adjustment I like, but do you think that it was – was it a worthwhile endeavor for Toronto to think about that? And I guess the real layer deeper is, like, when you think about playoff matchups, I feel like there's certain teams that maybe would look at this, like maybe the Celtics might, you know, this may feel like a possibility for them. I don't know if you can really get into this if you're the 76ers, even though you have a guy like Ben Simmons, but Embiid isn't the kind of dude that you can be running necessarily doubles in certain areas and then not have him kind of get a little bit caught up in the wash if you have those couple of crisp passes. Did you think it was worth it that Toronto tried to do this? Because to your point about, listen, with Kevin Durant's length and size, it just feels like, and his basketball IQ, you're kind of running, you're running yourself into a situation where now you're chasing your tail to the first pass off of that, and then the second pass, and a lot of open looks. And listen, you're always going to try something, I guess, but was it a fruitless endeavor, and do you think that other teams might look at that as a possible blueprint of something you try to run at Kevin Durant in the playoffs just to shake things up on that end of the court?
Well, you won't be able to do it if Harden's playing, for sure, because you just can't You can't overcommit any resources to one guy when he's also on the court, because it's a problem when he's just on the court by himself, right? So, like, I don't think you can do that at all. I think it'll be interesting to see if teams try it. So few teams have the personnel to even really make it a worthwhile endeavor, because typically the second guy that comes is going to have to be at least a little bit long and to make sure the pass doesn't go right over the top of that person, right? So, like, you didn't really see Van Vliet bring as the double too much. It was like a lot of times it was like Birch or someone like that that came as the doubler. And so, if I'm remembering correctly, it wasn't these smaller guards. So anyway, we'll get a little bit more into this, and then we'll talk about some of the playoff stuff too, because it probably all dovetails here together. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Rock Auto. Oh my goodness, buying car parts. Look, you don't usually, I'm going to be honest with you, you don't usually want to buy car parts, but you just have to. You got a car. It needs parts. Things break. It can be impossible taking it to a mechanic where you don't know what you're getting charged. You go into the local car part place. You don't know what even you're getting sometimes. I've gone into numerous of these local places where you just get an unmarked box, and you're just praying that it's the part you need, because it's definitely not clear from the way the box is presented to you that what is inside of it is going to be the thing that you need. None of that is a concern when you're using Rock Auto. Family-owned business for over 20 years is the best online place to buy auto parts. Easy drop-down menus, sortable database. All you got to do is type in the make and model of your car. It's going to drop it right down to the different parts that you're going to need, and you can know that you're getting prices that are 30 or even 50% better than some of those local places. Rock Auto, best place to buy car parts. All you need to do right now is when we go over to Rock Auto, you find the part your car needs, and they just say, how did you hear about us? Just type in Locked On, just like the podcast network. Easy, free, don't have to do anything else. Just say how you heard about Rock Auto. Rock Auto, all the parts your car will ever need. Go visit rockauto.com today.
So, yeah, I mean, you talk about that there as far as what Toronto tried to do to them. And then, you know, what's funny is you mentioned Birch coming over. And that's when you think about some of these other matchups, whether it's Milwaukee or Philadelphia. And I picture, because you can't just run average size guards over there, it's not really going to impede Kevin Durant's ability to see where he wants to go with the ball. And then if you think about, well, you know, Embiid, step out there and start to mix it up, it just opens up so much behind them. And again, this goes back to that compliment around the role players, right? Of just, hey, you guys know where to be. When you see this double team coming to me, space it out, get into your spots, and we're going to find ourselves a nice little rhythm shot. And then it's Kevin Durant being, you know, smart enough to go, yeah, I don't need to try to fight through this. I got the guys that can take care of it for me.
Well, that's the key, right? Because there was, I forgot to mention the part where they actually did back cut him a couple times, or they got so little resistance when you got past the first level of defense because they were so concerned even with him around the perimeter that it really did make the lanes open. And you can't open, if you open the lanes for guys like Kyrie Irving, you're really in big trouble, right? Because if that's going to look like it's a runway to the basket, he is just about as good as anybody in the game at getting there and making it and making the defense pay, even if there's sometimes there's a bigger defender waiting for him, right? So if
yeah, he's like Jamiroquai, he just glides on in there.
Oh, that Jamiroquai reference. I always think about that now, thinking about the way watching him move. He was doing a move the other night. I never talked about KD. He was doing something the other day that
Jamiroquai or KD?
Kyrie. Jamiroquai. Yeah, Jamiroquai. Jamiroquai Kyrie. I was trying to combine it. That was close. Where it looked like he was palming the ball, but he wasn't, and it was like this weird, like sort of pause dribble, but it was legal, but I don't know if anyone else actually can do it and make it illegal. Just like the guy's got so many tricks up his sleeve. But if you give him runways to the basket because you've overcommitted to something else too, like that's another way you get killed. Or you get back cut, yeah, which they did a couple times with Landry Shamet, like where everyone and Joe Harris, they just ran back cuts. Well, a couple didn't work because the passes were offline, but the idea was correct in principle to do that because so much opened up. So you know, your original question was it worth it to do this stuff with KD? It's going to be worth it to try different things in the playoffs because you're just going to have to. They've seen that there's no flaws in these guys' games that make it so that conventional defenses you can play mano a mano with them, because if you try to do that, you're just going to lose 123-110, right? Like, how many times have we seen this? I'm making the score up, but that's basically where they land with these games because they just outscore you. Yeah, you got more offensive rebounds. Yeah, you got some easy baskets. In the end, they beat you by double digits. Like, it happens every single time.
Well, that's why it's funny too, because I was reading an article over on CBS Sports from Sam Quinn, and he was kind of going through just some of the Eastern Conference contenders and different things. And when we think about what, you know, matchups and how teams are going to try to defend against the Nets, it almost, again, health being the caveat here, but it almost seems laughable about the how are these guys going to work together? What is it going to look like? How much they need to play together? And some of these examples are not one-to-one in terms of the big players only being on the court for seven games. But Quinn goes, you know, kind of goes through this, and he walks back just real quickly to last season, where he goes, you know, LA Lakers and Miami Heat were the two teams in the finals there. JaVale McGee was so important, in quotes, for the entire season for that team. Maybe not in quotes. He was important for them for the entire season, and then hardly gets into a game after the first round series. Likewise, on the other side of it, Myers Leonard, who was a big component of their roster for much of the season, he all but goes away until Bam Adebayo goes down with an injury. And it really started to make me think around this piece of survival versus cohesion, you know, getting through the doldrums of the season when you are one of these teams, when you are the Lakers or when you are the Heat, when you are the 76ers even, you're just trying to manage your way through it. And there's another example of this, two examples actually, when it comes to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2019, the Toronto Raptors against the Joel Embiids, against the 76ers. But remember, that's the game where it ends up being Kawhi's big shot in the corner to win that in Game 7. But when Joel Embiid was on the floor, they absolutely were on par. They could go toe-to-toe with these guys. They could take it. When he goes off the floor, though, they lost by 109 points over the 99 minutes that Joel Embiid was off the floor in that series.
That was the big story that whole series was, it was like, how many minutes could they keep him on the court for? Because every minute that he played was not on the court, they got absolutely murdered. Right. It was like,
right. And it's that, yes. And it was, yeah. If he can just be out there they're going to win this series. And he just couldn't. And that's only one player, right? I mean, that's just, I mean, Joel Embiid is one very important player, but it did get my wheels turning about, right, we're talking about having two, three superstars on the court and the level of importance that they have relative to, just like that, this Toronto game that they just came out of. Yeah, eventually you're just going to keep trying things. You're going to keep trying to do different looks. And at some point you're going to turn around and you're going to be down by double digits and you're going to kind of go, man, I thought we were doing it all pretty well here along the way. And somehow there we are. It's gotten away from us. And there's even the secondary example going back 2017 with the Cavaliers, right? They go up against the Golden State Warriors. And it was, of course, when LeBron James was on the floor. When he goes to the bench, they get outscored 27 points over 28 minutes in that title shot going up against the Golden State Warriors. So again, one player, though, in LeBron James, and the factor that it took, even with Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, it was about, can we get LeBron James to leave the court? And when he does, can we punish this team? The big benefit that the Brooklyn Nets have is Kevin Durant can go to the bench and it's still James Harden and Kyrie Irving, or vice versa. No matter what, you're still going to have two other dudes to try to figure out and manage. And that's probably why you give that generic score, right? 123-110. Yeah, you're going to look up like that in the fourth quarter more often than not and wonder, especially early in playoff series, you know, specifically, and wonder, how did this happen? And are we ever going to be able to change this script going forward?
Yeah, it's totally demoralizing. It's like the only, to know that there's like certain flips, switches that can get flipped for a guy to be on the court, and if you can just maintain, well, as long as he is on, and then knowing you're going to win the minutes when he's off, like those are the moments that you can beat these other middling teams, not these other very good teams, right? Like the Embiid series was, I still remember it very clearly. It was like, what is the minutes limit that they can run him? Because he was totally dead at times. And they still probably, if they had gone to overtime, would have probably won that series, the Sixers. Like that was, the tide was turning in that, and then Kawhi hit the shot. LeBron is just a force among himself, and he's never really, except for Anthony Davis now, he's never, I guess he had Kyrie, but like it was, you know, for years didn't have necessarily the supporting cast that he needed. With the Nets, it's, yeah, you can
respect
these
Barajal. I mean, honestly, you don't even care about the guy.
It's just like, I just dismissed him outright. It's weird. you can run this different stuff at these guys a time for as much as you want. You can get crafty. You can be long. You can do this different stuff. It might work for a little bit, but is it going to work for an entire game? No, it just, nothing is going to work for an entire game. That's why the key to having, like, at this point, really the only key of them winning the championship is just like, can Kevin Durant stay healthy? I hate to basically put it on, or like, what's going to have them be a puncher's chance in the finals here? Kevin Durant's health. Like, that's it. It's just that important. Right. Because they're going to win they're almost definitely going to win all the minutes he's on the court anyway. And there's a good chance they're not going to get, there's a good chance they're going to win the court minutes where he's off too, if everyone's healthy. But there's a very, what's not probably going to happen is they're not going to get murdered in those minutes where he's off, right? Like, as long as
the
minutes
are staggered. And that's very specific to Kevin Durant because of his position, his size, his length. It is different in matchup to matchups. If it's Harden and Kyrie, it's still going to be a big lift, but it's very different when you plug in Kevin Durant because he changes everything from the opposition standpoint, the matchups.
And that's why there's four of these guys total in the NBA, right? How many guys are really on this level? Honestly, it's like LeBron, KD. I mean, Giannis, I'm not even sure. It's in terms of like who can completely change the landscape of a game. I guess I have to put Giannis in there. Like the list is so, the point being, the list is so short. And frankly, Embiid's probably like this. And there's but in the end, how far are we going to get with this list? Six guys? It's not going to be longer than that, really. So. It's just why it's so important. So yeah, you can throw these doubles on it. They're going to figure it out really fast, and the personnel that they're going to figure out with is going to be guys like 10-day contract Mike James, right? Like it's not going to be, it need not even be some other Kyrie level superstar. It can be a 2-man game with Mike James, and all of a sudden he looks really competent because the game is going to flow really easily through any little adjustment that's getting made. All right, we're going to get to. We're going to talk about Nets fans, where we are with Nets fandom as we get in near the playoffs, who are going to be the famous fans that are going to carry the water here for the Nets, social media, in the stands maybe. I know like we're getting toward opening up some capacity. There's going to be some people in the stands. Who are the Nets fans that sort of define the Nets movement right now? First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to get in bets on all the sports action you want. MLB in full swing right now. Obviously, NBA crazy nights every single night with these lines with players in and out and injured and playing. You never know what's going on. The lines swing massively. A lot of stuff to take advantage over there at Bet BetOnline.ag. Maybe you want to just get in the NFL draft. It's coming up here. These prop bets on the NFL draft. They got plenty of them over at BetOnline. It's everything you need for your sports betting needs. Right now, don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their run to the playoffs in the NBA. Head on over to the website betonline.ag on your mobile device or computer. Sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. That's a 50% welcome bonus. Have to use that promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And now, before we do get into this fan piece of it, because I do, you know, a little bit of the lighter side, right? Well, that's what you're here for. You're here for the insight, and you're also here for the fun. But one last piece that was that this article really did outline as well was around then the Nets, and as it was in the title, center rotation and what's going to happen there. And they do go along the way and chronicle kind of how DeAndre Jordan has looked against some of the bigger guys like Embiid, highlighted that monster performance that he had where I can't remember what his point total was, something in the 40s there, and eventually got on track, you know, as he says in the article, Quinn flummoxed him for a little bit and then figured it out, you know, in good order. The last piece that I was just curious about, and I shouldn't even say that, the last piece that I'm going to dispel about it is he rightfully, Quinn, that is, says they're going to need to rely on DeAndre Jordan, the guy that they were trying to work all season to essentially replace on this roster and almost did with LMA, and then we know he retired. So now he's there and they're going to need to count on him. The way that you don't really need to count on him is everything we just said about Kevin Durant and how it impacts. And that's why DeAndre Jordan, yes, would you like to have someone else maybe? Sure. And also, no, we're never going to have, there's never going to be a game where if the Nets were to lose in the playoffs, you go, well, because of DeAndre Jordan, because that's not what the role and expectation is supposed to be coming in. So if that's what you take away from a loss, you're looking at it the wrong way. It's supposed to be the big three that are doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, I can't disagree with this assessment anymore. It's like, it's frankly kind of misses the point. He uses the examples that then dispel the example. It's the exact reason why JaVale McGee no longer started once the playoffs started. It's why Myers Leonard was no longer useful once right. The playoffs started. It's like, it's weird to use those examples and then make the point like you need the guy, even though you just use the examples of why you don't need the guy. Like, it's just a very weird. I'm not trying to call the article out, but it just, as long as I'm hearing this correctly, it just doesn't. Those two things are counterintuitive. It's actually the first point dispels the second point. They don't need DeAndre Jordan. In fact, a lot of the times those guys were starters in name. It was always so weird to me, these teams that do this. They would run the center position starters for like 15 total minutes for the game. And I was like, I never really understood what the point was except to start a center that looked like a center. JaVale was one of these guys. Myers was one of these guys. Weirdly, the Wizards do this right now with Alex Len, who starts and then plays like 14 minutes a game. I just don't really understand what the thought process is with this. But what is clear each time that it happens is those teams that do end up making to the playoffs, unless it's Embiid or Jokic or Brook Lopez, the centers are, they just go away, right? Yeah. Like, I just think, like, except for those, I mean, unless I'm missing a guy here, I guess Robert Williams will probably start for the Celtics. It's not DeAndre Ayton. I guess the list isn't crazy, but these are also guys that play real minutes in the playoffs, in the regular season also.
Right? Nobody getting 15 minutes in the regular season, all of a sudden you're, and now 30
of
minutes.
Of course not. Of course not. So it's weird that they would use that example and then say this is why they need DeAndre, because that's exactly the reason he would sit on the bench for the entire playoffs, unless they probably see Embiid. Like, I'm not even sure you'd probably want to play him against Jokic here. So anyway, no, I disagree with that. I think he's frankly gonna not. I mean, he DMP'd last night in a game that they ran eight guys. What's the situation he's gonna play now? Embiid probably. I don't really see another situation.
And that's to get pick up fouls. But let's turn our attention to the big thing. And this is actually a little backtrack onto the locker room that we did. We're shouting out fans and the big name fans. But listen, our fans are big name fans too. Bones and Hassan, man, just what a great time we had with them on locker room last night. So as far as the podcast is concerned, those are some of our biggest fans. But who's going to be? You said it. You said it before the segment. Like, who's going to be our Spike Lee? You know, that dude has been a fair weather fan. He looks absolutely insane on the sidelines with the getups that he's there with and the matching glasses and the orange and everything else. But this is a dude that, like, you know, you think New York Knicks, you think Spike, you know, you think of him. the name that I can't even mention anymore. Or Jack Nicholson with the LA Lakers, right? Like for so many years, it was him sitting there on the sidelines. I do wonder, are we going to get like some of those, you know, celebrity bandwagon guys that just kind of pop up and, you know, the proverbial, oh, look, it's CeCe Sabathia, former New York Yankees pitcher, taking in a game during the playoffs. Like, I want the true Brooklyn grit guys that have been a part of this thing all the way through.
Well, I mean, and then the obvious name that people are going to go to is guys like Jay-Z, right? Like this, he's a name that's been attached to the team for, you know, ownership reasons in the past and other stuff. And he's clearly the most famous guy probably to ever be part of this. I'm not sure, again, how many people associate his name with the fandom anymore. I'm just gonna bury it.
Associate him with being a fan even when he was a part of the team, right? Like, I mean, it was about ownership. Like, yeah. I didn't think he was a fan of the Brooklyn Nets. He's just a businessman.
Yeah, maybe I was just co-opting the ownership piece onto the fandom. I'll tell you right now, it's got to be Jeffrey Wright. I can't find another guy who's tweeting about the Nets with a fervor that's also overlapping with the just overall fame of the guy in terms of just his, where he is in acting. Because if you look at his, this is a guy with, not to say that Twitter followers are the be-all end-all of your fame. I would say if you have 300,000 Twitter followers, you're doing something right in the old getting noticed department. And obviously Jeffrey Wright's a phenomenal actor and been in, you know, tons of stuff, Westworld, and he played John Michael Basquiat and all the way back in the 90s. So like, there's like another Brooklyn tie here. But if you go follow
Hunger
if you
Games,
don't, if you know,
I'm just, you know,
what's that?
I said Hunger Games. Just if we're, you know, if we're going through it, James Bond movies. This guy has a track record.
Yeah, and but if you read, if you go through Twitter, I mean, this dude is definitely. I mean, he's tweeting sort of like
he's
deep,
in it.
Oh, deep cut NBA stuff here. Like this is like the stuff like. You know, calling out like Mike James on a nice roll. I'm looking at some of these warming up, Joe. Nice look for Mike James. Mike James in the NBA. Like he's talking about Nets role players. Let me put it this way. He's using his platform, which is abounding with followers, to tweet about the Nets right now. And I can't think of anybody else with this level of reach that is just spending his time. Because I have to believe that there's a massive, massive number of his followers that could not even care. Frankly, probably don't even know what he's talking about. Right? Like at what number of
this?
Like,
they're like, look up Mike James. Is that a character from something? Pull up his filmography. I can't figure out what I'm supposed to be seeing here.
Yeah, well, we miss Nick and Alize. DJ, where are you at? Like, that's one of the tweets. There has to be 297,000 of his followers that have no idea. Like what that means or who that's referring to. No, but I love it though, because it is clear fandom. This, and it's awesome when this happens, because it's clearly the guy wants to talk about basketball. I'm throwing him out there. I'm nominating Jeffrey Wright right now as the most famous real Nets fan that there is. I want to hear from anybody out there that has a better name, or if we want to bracketize this thing a little bit, I'm here for it. I'm gonna put it here, because when we get to the playoffs, we're going to need these 300,000 for Twitter followers. We're going to need these. I don't even look at Instagram. It's probably something like that over there too. The guy's, you know, crazy famous. But if we're looking for someone,
I want the swell. Yeah, I want the social media clout so that when the Nets are winning games, I want to see the explosion after the final buzzer, right? And quite frankly, as you say, Locked On Nets podcast, we nominate Jeffrey Wright to be that man to lead the charge.
Yeah, so come at us. Who are we forgetting? Adam and I kind of sat on it for a little while. Nets are new to the limelight here, I think. I'm not saying Jeffrey Wright is new to the fandom. It's clear that he's actually not. this is you just don't tweet this kind of stuff if you're just looking for to tail some bandwagon Nets stuff. Like, this is a guy who's watching the games and getting down and dirty with it. So that's our guy right now. That's what I'm going to nominate. Please say who else it is, because we need to get the list growing here, because we're going to need to know who we need to call on come playoff time. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again tomorrow after the Pacers game, talking about the results there. Little Caris LeVert, second reunion, because they've already seen him once since the trade. In the meantime, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust. Had an awesome download day today. We're really appreciative. I'm flummoxed. I'm in awe. I feel great every single day we look at these. They've continued to climb over the course of the season. The way they're climbing, there's a good chance there's one or two or 10 or a lot more new listeners that are coming onto this one. Very appreciative to have you on board. The way you can help the podcast continue to grow, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And as you know, you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of all of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. And hey, friends, consciousness isn't a journey upward, but a journey inward. Not a pyramid, but a maze. Bernard Lowe, as played by one Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.